Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. And with me today is Aaron Shafawaloff, my colleague at MRM. And Aaron, today I'd like to discuss the subject of plausible deniability, because you and I both, as you know, working, talking with Mormons on the streets of Utah, we find plenty of examples of this. Why don't you first of all give somewhat of a definition of what plausible deniability is, and then let's discuss some of the examples of how we've seen that in action here in Utah.
Well, to the listeners, when you get home, Google this term, plausible deniability, and one of the first things you'll see pop up as an example is Iran-Contra. Mm-hmm. And Iran-Contra, I don't know a lot about it, but Reagan did something, he had something happen.
Oliver North.
Oliver North was the fall guy?
Yes.
So basically, Reagan was shielded from being held accountable for it. There was a kind of a protective layer put around him such that he could not be held responsible for what happened, even though he really was at some real...
At some level.
Responsible.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people think.
Okay, well, whether or not you think he was or was not, it's an historical example of what's perceived to be plausible deniability. What happens in Mormonism is the leaders have said so many egregious things, they've done certain things, they've taught certain things that are embarrassing. And what Mormonism has done to sort of shield itself as a culture, tradition, leadership from criticism, especially fatal criticism, is to put a protective layer of plausible deniability around its leaders. So I'll give you an example of kind of where this goes. I asked a Mormon apologist, an up-and-coming young guy outside General Conference, his name's Steven, and we were talking about my frustration that it seems like Mormonism gives its leaders a free pass to say whatever really they want.
There always seems to be some kind of an excuse as to why you can't take some of these embarrassing statements seriously.
Right. So let's just take this to its logical, you know, extension. As I like doing that. I push these issues using thought experiments. And I said, what if Thomas Monson said at General Conference, behind the pulpit, that it was his opinion that Jesus Christ was a sinner? And let's say because of his influence, 90% of the people went on to believe it, and that 11 of the 12 apostles, or 14 out of the 15, golden 15, the leadership believed that Jesus was a sinner, but not yet unanimous. It's not yet canonized, but let's just say it's part of the manuals, the institutional channels of influence, the magazines. I mean, this is basically just coming out of Salt Lake City in Provo, and this is something that's being taught. That yet doesn't fulfill the conditions that Mormon defenders, apologists, have set forth for what constitutes something that we can call official. And the strictest standards for what is quote-unquote official usually have something that requires canonization. In other words, it's unanimously voted upon for inclusion into the standard works, into its scriptures. Apart from that, it's not yet official. So Stephen responded that if Monson did teach that Jesus was a sinner, and it fulfilled all those other conditions, yet was not yet official. I mean, it was taught General Conference. People believed it. It's in the institutional literature. It's not yet blasphemy, he said. And it's not yet the kind of disqualifying fruit that would show Monson to be a false prophet. In other words, the plausible deniability structure that they've put around Monson, at least for Stephen as an example, is such that he could literally teach that Jesus Christ himself was a sinner and they'd have an excuse for him. The church would still be true, no harm done in the final sense. So here's the way I kind of, with a little bit of edge, put it. You know, your own leaders in Mormonism have said the church, especially the president of the church, will never lead the church astray. It seems as though that's been redefined to mean the church may, the president may lead you astray, but he'll never officially lead you astray.
Now that sounds so bizarre to our whole concept of what false teaching is.
Right, because for the Christian, false teaching's really centered around the content and the honor of Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Mormonism, it's more about the honor of the church at the expense, potentially, of the honor of the Godhead. And it's more the determining factor is more officiality, institutionality, you know, this abstract notion of officiality than it is about content. And so it's a really big issue. The other way I like to put it is, you know, Jesus said, there's going to be false prophets. You'll know them by their fruits. Watch out. It's as though Mormonism has redefined that to mean, you know, Jesus says, there's going to be false prophets. You'll know them when their fruits become officially canonized as binding doctrine upon the church in the most abstract, strict, you know, canonical, academically Mormon BYU manner possible. I mean, literally, they can say whatever they want. And we have this thought experiment with, you know, that we just mentioned. But we have real examples of stuff happening in Mormon history that's awful.
Oh, yeah.
And that Mormon leaders have called awful in essence. Mm-hmm. And yet they're given a free pass for it.
You take, for instance, like the Adam God doctrine that Brigham Young taught in April of 1852. I mean, you hear Mormons today, they use words like theory.
Right.
To apply to it, or just Brigham Young's opinion.
So just in case our listeners don't know what we're talking about, I'll read you one of the key quotes in General Conference. Brigham Young taught that, quote, when our father Adam came into the Garden of Eden, he came into it with a celestial body and brought Eve, one of his wives, with him. He helped make and organize this world. He is Michael, the archangel, the Ancient of Days, about whom holy men have written and spoken. He is our Father and our God, and he is the only God with whom we have to do. Elsewhere, we learn from Brigham's thought structure that he believed Adam and Eve were God, the Father, and one of the heavenly mothers, and that they already had resurrected bodies that came to the garden. The reason they eat of the forbidden fruit, was to sort of have the ability to have mortal children because they had immortal, celestial, resurrected bodies already. Adam, for Brigham, was the one who physically impregnated Mary. It's a rabbit hole. You can Google it, Adam God. But here's the point. Later Mormon leaders, Spencer Kimball, for example, he calls the Adam God teaching of Brigham just a theory. And he sort of suggests that...
In the priesthood session of conference you're talking about, years later, he never mentions Brigham's name, which I find very telling.
Which some general authorities are alleged to have taught.
Now, right there, that's dishonest.
It's dishonest, and there's an even better example, if I could put it out real quick. Bruce McConkie gave a talk at BYU called The Seven Deadly Heresies, and he literally mentions Adam God as a deadly, damnable heresy that if you teach, you are basically disqualifying yourself from exaltation.
He also said that if you believe it, you're a cultist. That's the word he used.
Right. So elsewhere, he wrote a private letter to Eugene England.
England.
Mm-hmm. And he admits that Brigham taught Adam God. He even qualifies as the cultists allege. Yeah. Now, he says that Brigham wasn't always consistent, but he does admit that Brigham actually taught it. Mm-hmm. Bruce essentially gave Brigham a free pass. Yes, Brigham taught it, but he's still a true prophet.
And yet in that same letter, he says, if you teach a false concept of God, you're going to be damned. So that makes it even worse.
If I put the two and two together, here's what I get.
Yeah.
If I want to become a Mormon, knowing what I know about Mormon history and what Mormon leaders have taught, I've got to swallow the idea that a true prophet can publicly, authoritatively teach from General Conference a teaching that is later denounced by subsequent Mormon leaders as false, deadly, damnable heresy and still be a true prophet. Now, here's the point, plausible deniability. Mormon defenders, intellectuals, apologists have essentially said, well, even though Matthew Brown of FAIR, at the FAIR 2008 Mormon Defenders FAIR conference, he essentially admits Brigham taught it, even for a while at the St. George Temple ceremony, the Adam God teaching was integrated into the lecture at the Veil. It was even taught at General Conference. It was even taught in the temple, but mm-hmm. not yet, quote unquote, official. and somehow that
word
makes it okay. And yeah. I get really, my blood runs on this issue because I've set at Miller's in Manti, Utah. I've had milkshakes with fundamentalist Mormons. That sounds corny, but you know, I've said across the table, look them straight in the eye, and they look me straight in the eye. And this is not a game to them. This is not a historical game to them. They have bought into Adam God. They've bought into Brigham Young, and they've invested their whole life, their money, their dreams, their hopes, their families, their polygamy, all into this. They were led astray. I like to ask Mormons, were these fundamentalist Mormons led astray by Brigham into believing Adam God? Because they believe it. There are tens of thousands, at least tens of thousands of people today who believe in Adam God. Mm-hmm. Because Brigham taught it. And the image I get is of Mormons, mainstream, and this is harsh, I'm sorry, but mainstream Mormons are on a kind of overpass bridge, and there's water flowing under the bridge, and there's all these fundamentalist Mormons who are trying to stay above water. They're just treading, they're drowning, and they're real people with real names, and mainstream Mormonism essentially says, water under the bridge. Ooh, that's part of history. Not a big deal. We don't teach it anymore. And Brigham gets a free pass via plausible deniability structures for having taught stuff that goes against the Bible, that goes against what even modern Mormonism teaches is even close to acceptable teaching. I'm passionate about this. Sorry.
I don't blame you to be, especially when you look at the fact that Brigham Young did think it was a doctrine that was given to him by God. The fact that it was in the temple ceremony shows that it had to have some kind of divine origins, because Mormons are told that. But yet when you have Brigham Young ending that sermon saying something to this effect, he says, "Now let all who may hear these doctrines pause before they make light of them or treat them with indifference, for they will prove their salvation or damnation."
That's pretty serious, and fundamentalist Mormons take it seriously.
You know, Stephen Robinson actually offered the fact that he thought, well, he offered this as a possibility that Brigham Young was joking when he said that. I don't think so. Right. See, this is the kind of stuff, folks, this is what has to get out. If the Mormon church is really the only true church on earth, why does it behave like this? And you've heard me say this, you know, if it doesn't want to be known as a cult, it needs to quit acting like a cult.
Christian leaders can say very false things, but when you claim to be an apostle or prophet and you have a wide scope of influence like that, and you're speaking authoritatively, the stakes are high. And you ought to hold, if you loved Captain Lord Jesus, King of Kings, Lord of Lords, you ought to hold leaders accountable for things like that.
Exactly. And that's what we're trying to do here at MRM. We hope that this will help you out in trying to make these decisions. And we thank you for being with us.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. When trying to understand the doctrines of our Latter-day Saint friends, family members, and co-workers, it can be very difficult to know what to believe. In his resource titled, In Their Own Words, A Collection of Mormon Quotations, Mormonism Research Ministry's Bill McKeever compiles some of the very best Mormon quotations that will help you better understand what LDS leaders and scholars have said on such issues as atonement, exaltation, and pre-existence. Written in an encyclopedic format, In Their Own Words provides quotes on literally dozens of issues, alphabetically listed for quick reference that can be found in a matter of seconds. No more wondering what Mormonism's leaders have said on any topic. And this resource is available in both book format as well as on CD disc. Just load the PDF file onto your computer and you're ready to do valuable research. These are the very best quotes that Mormonism Research Ministry uses on a regular basis. In Their Own Words is available now at mrm.org. Again, mrm.org. Get it today.